Okay, so a couple things. First of all, homework set 8 was to be done on Monday. Now, if there are any difficulties on that, I can address them now. I'm going to make available this afternoon problem set 9. It's going to deal with eigenvectors and eigenvalues. And so today's lecture, afterwards, you should be able to answer all the problems on problem set 9. I've also posted the solutions, including the next assignment, homework assignment 10, on Canvas. We're getting close to the end of the semester, so I want to have all the material available to you at all times. And in fact, on the homework problems, the solutions I post are not going to be exactly the problems that WebAssign asks you to solve because they change the numbers. But you can at least look at my solutions if you get stuck in figuring out how to approach a problem or what the procedure is. Today, we'll continue with the eigenvector and eigenvalue problem. If you look on problem set 9, you're typically given a matrix and you're asked to find its eigenvalues and its eigenvectors, but there's two more additional bits of data that we'll cover today. So, I might as well just start with the lecture. There'll be two additional numbers one associates with an eigenvalue. One would be a so-called algebraic multiplicity. That's going to depend on how that characteristic polynomial factorizes. And then there's another associated multiplicity. It's basically the dimension of the corresponding eigenspace. So once you have an eigenvector, it's going to have a certain algebraic multiplicity because it comes as the roots of the characteristic polynomial. That's the algebraic multiplicity. The geometric multiplicity, as the name implies, it has to do with more geometry, and in fact, it's dimension of the corresponding eigenspace. All right, so I'll show you in the course of today's lecture how these guys come up. But let's review what we know so far. You have a square matrix, call it A, n by n, then the eigenvector eigenvalue problem for that matrix is finding vectors v and numbers lambda so that this condition wherein matrix multiplication by A can be replaced by scalar multiplication by the number lambda, that's what we're seeking to do. And I should point out here that if you look at this equation, a given eigenvector v that satisfies the equation is only going to do so for one value of lambda. Because if I change lambda, the entire right-hand side of the equation is changing, but on the left-hand side, it's not changing. So there's only going to be one eigenvalue for a given eigenvector. In contrast, for a given eigenvalue, you may have more, you'll have infinitely many eigenvectors. Because I can take this whole equation and I can replace v by a scalar multiple of itself, and it's still going to satisfy the same condition with the same eigenvalue. So it might seem that maybe the first thing we should do is find the eigenvectors, and then they'll determine all the eigenvalues. But in fact, we do just the opposite. What we do is we figure out the possible numbers lambda first, and then we figure out the eigenvectors that work. All right, so the nomenclature here is that vectors v that satisfy such an equation are called eigenvectors, and the numbers lambda that are appropriate for a given eigenvector is called the eigenvalue corresponding to that eigenvector. With one caveat to remember, one way to satisfy an equation like one is to set v equal to the zero vector. That particular solution is irrelevant. Because as soon as you substitute zero on both sides, you get a trivial equation that just says zero is equal to zero, or more precisely, the zero vector is equal to the zero vector. Well, that's not really a condition. All right, so here's how we approach the problem. We take the eigenvector condition and we transform it into something a little bit more recognizable in the context of this course. This condition implies that this equation has to be satisfied. I'm just taking the lambda b to the opposite side and then putting in a factor of the identity matrix. But then think of x as just being d. This condition is equivalent to saying that d has to satisfy this linear system. And so the way we actually will find eigenvectors is by solving linear systems, which means row reducing a matrix to reducer echelon form, et cetera. But we can do that once we know what the eigenvalues are. So the first thing we do to solve an eigenvector eigenvalue problem is to figure out the appropriate values of the parameter lambda. And since we're looking for non-zero solutions of this, we require the coefficient matrix of this homogeneous linear system. We need its coefficient matrix to have determinant zero. Because back when we were studying invertibility of matrices, we discovered that you can have solutions other than x equals zero only when the determinant of the coefficient matrix is equal to zero. All right, so that led us to the following procedure. Given a matrix A, we construct a certain polynomial, not from A itself, but what we do is we subtract from A along its main diagonal a parameter lambda. Then when we take the determinant of that, we're going to get a polynomial in all the entries of A, but in particular in this along the diagonal, you're going to have things that are proportional or terms of lambda. This polynomial is going to end up being a polynomial degree n in that parameter. What we want is that the determinant of this matrix to equal zero. That's going to give us a polynomial condition on lambda. We call the polynomial the characteristic polynomial, and the solutions of P, A of lambda equals zero, those are going to be exactly our eigenvalues. And so our focus is going to be on the equation we get once we calculate this polynomial. And that will be the characteristic equation of the matrix A. By the way, there's something interesting that happens here that you don't really see until advanced linear algebra. But when you're solving a polynomial equation, you're looking for numbers. So once you substitute a solution in, the evaluation of the right-hand side produces zero, right? That's how you know you have a solution. But those polynomials, this characteristic polynomial, PA of lambda equals determinant A minus lambda times the identity matrix. This is going to be if A is n by n, then this is going to be a polynomial of degree n. It's going to look like lambda to the n plus some coefficient, lambda to the n minus 1, et cetera, plus maybe a1, lambda to the first power, plus a constant a0. So as soon as you have an explicit matrix A and you compute this determinant, it's going to work out to be a polynomial of degree n. And the way you verify that lambda is actually an eigenvalue is you substitute it into this polynomial and it evaluates to zero, presumably because some of these signs are different and you get cancellations. But what's actually surprising is instead of just substituting numbers into this equation, you can actually substitute A itself, because since A is an n by n matrix, you can take powers and you get, A times A is just an n by n matrix times an n by n matrix. This matches, so that multiplication is defined. And what you get out of it is another n by n matrix. So rather than substitute numbers into the characteristic polynomial, it's also possible to substitute a matrix into this polynomial. And what you get is a to the power n plus some coefficient times a to the power n minus 1. Surprise is, this is so-called Cayley-Hamilton theory. that if you do so, if you take the characteristic polynomial for the given matrix, that's going to determine all these coefficients, and instead of substituting a number, lambda, you put the matrix in there, you get zero automatically. So in fact, the matrix satisfies the same equation as the eigenvalues do. These are numbers, the way we'll use it, but if we simply replace them by the matrix A that defines this polynomial, it automatically equals zero. So that's kind of a big surprise, but it's not so relevant to this course. What we're going to do today is just work out the details of how we find not only the eigenvalues, but also the corresponding eigenvectors. So what we're doing so far is we're setting up this polynomial, and it's going to have the property that the roots of that polynomial, the solutions of P subscript A of lambda equal to zero, those are going to be exactly the eigenvalues. So the solutions of this equation, when we interpret lambda as a number, are going to be the eigenvalues of A. All right, so just a little bit about solving polynomial equations. Every polynomial of degree n can be factorized over the complex numbers. So this coefficient and these numbers r1 through rn, you have to take them as being complex numbers in general in order to achieve this full factorization. But when you can achieve this full factorization, then the numbers r1 through rn, those are effectively the roots, exactly the values of x for which the polynomial vanishes. And so, yeah, so the fundamental theorem of algebra just says in order to be a solution of P of x equals zero, given this factorization, x equals r is only going to be a solution of this equation when x minus r actually divides that polynomial. So the strategy for solving polynomial equations is to work out this factorization. So let's do it in a particular example. I'm choosing a real simple matrix, so I don't have to do a lot of row reduction or yet. So here I take an upper triangular matrix. The reason why I did that is because I want to do a simple determinant calculation. When a matrix is upper triangular, the determinant is just the product of the diagonal elements. So for this particular matrix, when I calculate the characteristic polynomial, it's going to be trivial. I just have to, the matrix remains upper triangular, so I just have to multiply along the main diagonal to calculate that determinant. And so what we get in the end is a polynomial that's in fact nicely factorized already for us, and we see that the only way this polynomial is going to equal zero, well, one of these factors has to equal zero. So either lambda has to equal one, or lambda has to equal two, or lambda has to equal one again. So we really only have two distinct solutions of P of A of lambda equal to zero. Those are going to be the eigenvalues of A. We'll have one eigenvalue one and a second eigenvalue two. All right, now I'm going to introduce the first multiplicity because it's already apparent. First, let's talk about polynomials in general. When you have a polynomial of degree n and you've got it factorized as best you can in terms of linear polynomials, you'll end up with something that looks like this. What are these exponents? What I'm assuming here is that maybe some of the, as in this previous example, maybe some of the factors are exactly the same. So I'm going to collect them all together. And so when I write an expression down like this, R1 and R2 are going to be different numbers corresponding to different solutions of P of x equal to zero. And the totality of them, R1 through RK, those are going to be all the solutions of P of x equal to zero. An algebraist would call these numbers roots of the polynomial, and these exponents here would be the multiplicities of those roots. Okay, now linear algebra, we're going to have a different kind of multiplicity, so we need a little more specialized language. We're still going to, instead of calling the roots of the characteristic equation roots, we'll identify them as eigenvalues. So eigenvalues are the roots of this polynomial, but rather than introduce a new word root, I'll just continue to call them eigenvalues. But these the multiplicity of a root, the number of times it appears in the factorization of the characteristic polynomial, rather than just calling that the multiplicity of that root, I'm going to call it the algebraic multiplicity of the corresponding eigenvalue. So if I say, if lambda is an eigenvalue of A with algebraic multiplicity, let's see, M, what that means, let's make changes to R. So if R is an eigenvalue of a matrix A with eigenvalue M, what that means is that there is a factor of lambda minus R to the M in PA of lambda. So that algebraic multiplicity just tells you what the multiplicity of the corresponding root is. All right, but as I'm hinting, there's another kind of multiplicity as well. All right, so in the last example, I had a specific matrix, this matrix, and I calculated its characteristic polynomial. And what I found is that that polynomial had two factors of 1 minus lambda and a single factor of 2 minus lambda. Okay, that's where I'm catching up with this. And now, because we have two distinct roots, lambda equal to 1 and lambda equal to 2, those are going to be precisely our eigenvalues. But now I can ascribe to them not only the fact that they're a solution of PA of lambda equal to 0, but I can also identify their algebraic multiplicity. The root lambda equal to 1 has algebraic multiplicity 2. The root lambda equals 2 has algebraic multiplicity 1 because it only occurs one time in that factorization. All right. So we found all possible eigenvalues of the matrix A. There's only two of them. Now we're going to look for the corresponding eigenvectors. And for that, we're going to end up plugging in eigenvalues as numbers, not as parameters, and demand that our eigenvectors satisfy the eigenvalue condition. This space here, the space of all vectors with eigenvalue R, is called the R eigenspace of A. And we can calculate it because this condition is equivalent to saying that this matrix, A minus R times I times a vector x, is equal to 0. So we're looking for the null space of this matrix. And that we can calculate in the usual fashion. We have a coefficient matrix. We'll row reduce it to the reduced row echelon form. Then we convert back to equations, and we can write down a typical solution vector and expand it in terms of the free parameters. We'll have certain constant vectors in that expansion. Those constant vectors are going to be the eigenvectors we seek. All right, so before we do an explicit example, the set of all possible vectors in Rn with eigenvalue R for a given matrix, there's in general going to be infinitely many of those. Because if you have one vector, if V satisfies AV equals, let me put a specific eigenvalue, RV, then so does any scalar multiple of V. You could say, for example, if I multiply V by 2, I can still maintain the same equation. And so there's always, if you have if you have an eigenvalue, there's always going to be infinitely many eigenvectors with that eigenvalue. We can't write them all down, but what we can do is instead look at the space that's generated by the eigenvalues, and that's going to be a finite dimensional space. It's going to have a basis. And so we satisfy ourselves that we've got all the eigenvectors if we can write down a basis for the corresponding eigenspace. We think of this as a subspace of Rn, and we try to find a set of vectors that completely generates the space by taking linear combinations, and which, once we write a vector in V, a vector in this subspace as a linear combination of these guys, that the coefficients and the expansion of that vector with respect to the basis vectors is unique. All right, so what we're going to do is, once we have the eigenvalues, we're going to examine these spaces, and we're going to try to find a basis for these subspaces. Those basis vectors are what we call the eigenvectors corresponding to that eigenvalue. All right, so here's the nomenclature that we'll be using. The polynomial we create by shifting A along the diagonal by a parameter lambda and taking its determinant, that's the characteristic polynomial. As a polynomial of degree n, it's going to have a factorization. We call these offsets from lambda the eigenvalues. These are going to, R1, R2, up to Rk, are going to be the roots of the polynomial. Or in other words, they're going to be the eigenvalues of the matrix A. The numbers M1, M2, up to Mk, telling us how many times a factor lambda minus a given eigenvalue occurs in the characteristic polynomial, those are going to be referred to as the algebraic multiplicity of the eigenvalue. So for the eigenvalue R2, the corresponding algebraic multiplicity is this power M2. And then distinct from that are the subspace of Rn that consists of all possible eigenvectors with a given eigenvalue. That's going to be a finite dimensional subspace of Rn. We call it the Ri eigenspace of A. And our goal would be to find a basis for each of these subspaces. The basis vectors we're going to refer to as the eigenvectors of A with a particular eigenvalue. Now, if you have a subspace and you have a basis for the subspace, the dimension of that subspace is the number of basis vectors you have. It's the number of independent directions that span that space. So we're going to grab that bit of data, but we'll call it the geometric multiplicity of an eigenvalue. So once I figure out what these spaces are, I count the number of basis vectors, I'm going to get an integer that I'm going to call the geometric multiplicity of the corresponding eigenvalue. So I'm going to use mu subscript I to indicate the dimension of the eigenspaces, and m subscript I to indicate the number of factors of R lambda minus Ri that occurs in the characteristic polynomial. These are the definitions you'll need to do problem set 9 on WebAssign. I think you have about 6 problems in which in each of them you have to calculate the characteristic polynomial, find the eigenvalues, and then identify both the algebraic and geometric multiplicities of the eigenvalue, and you're also going to have to find these basis vectors. So let me, before I work out some explicit examples, let me make one remark about algebraic and geometric multiplicities. I'll try to keep this up on the blackboard. So PA of lambda, this polynomial, A minus lambda I, this is used to find the eigenvalues. And separate from this, we have mi as the number of times lambda minus ri occurs in PA of lambda. This is going to be the algebraic multiplicity of Ri. And then distinct from this is the number mu I. This is going to be the number of basis vectors for the eigenspace corresponding to that eigenvalue. It's equivalent is the dimension of that space. Okay, and then what I'm going to point out on this slide is some connections between these two numbers. The first one, this first identity, here I'm restating the definition. Here's one identity that when you add up all the algebraic multiplicities, they have to, they sum up to a number that's identical to the number of rows or columns of the original matrix. That's because this determinant, as the determinant of an n by n matrix, is a polynomial of degree n. Now, PA of lambda equals a polynomial of degree n if we started off with an n by n matrix. But from algebra, we know that every polynomial has a factorization. And we've been writing it now as lambda minus R1 to some power M1, lambda minus maybe the last eigenvalue RK to some power MK. This polynomial is going to have a complete factorization, but it's still going to have to be a polynomial of degree N. What's that going to mean? What's the highest power of lambda that can come out of such a product like this? Well, the leading term of this polynomial is going to be lambda to the power M1. Same thing for the second factor and third factor and the last factor. And then when I multiply, so this is going to look like lambda to the M1 plus some other stuff. And then to get to multiply lambda to the M2 plus some other stuff, once I expand these products of lambda minus R with itself. And then when you multiply these guys together, what I'm not writing here are the lower order terms in this expansion. And so this is going to start off as lambda to the M1 plus M2 plus MK plus lower order terms. This polynomial is of degree M1 plus M2 up to MK, but it's got to be a polynomial of degree N. That's why those multiplicities have to add up to N. Now, it turns out that the geometric multiplicities do not have to add up to N any longer. Rather, there's a relationship between an algebraic multiplicity and the corresponding geometric multiplicity. There's a relationship between the number of times a given factor occurs in the characteristic polynomial and the dimension of the corresponding eigenspace. But that relation is a kind of a weak one. They're not exactly equal, and they're not always less than. There's just less than or equal. The geometric multiplicities are always less than or equal to the corresponding algebraic multiplicities. So what's going to happen, and this is a good check to make sure you're calculating things correctly, the algebraic multiplicities should always add up to n, but the geometric multiplicities are going to add up to a number that's less than or equal to n. All right, so let's continue with the example. Here with that triangular matrix we started off with, we've already identified that the roots of the characteristic equation are 1 and 2. And now what we're going to do is for each eigenvalue, 1 or 2, we're going to calculate the corresponding eigenspace. Now that's done by effectively solving a homogeneous linear system where the coefficient matrix is the matrix you started off with the corresponding eigenvalue subtracted along the main diagonal. So here's the first one. For the eigenvalue 1, we subtract the number 1 along the main diagonal. That's now explicitly computed this matrix. We want to find its null space. So we do row reduction until we reach a matrix in reduced row echelon form. Here it is. The pivots I have 2 in the first and second row. They're both equal to 1. And above and below the pivots, I have only zeros. So the matrix on the third line is the reduced row echelon form of this matrix 1 minus the eigenvalue times the identity matrix. Now, I've got the coefficient matrix in reduced row echelon form. I can use this to write down equations of the solution. And in fact, I can also use this matrix to interpret the first column corresponding to the variable x1. That's going to be a free variable. And then the second column and the third column corresponding to x2 and x3, those are going to be fixed variables. The first row of this matrix tells me that x2 has to equal 0. 0 times x1, 1 times x2, plus 0 times x3 has to equal 0, or simply x2 is equal to 0. The second row tells me x3 is equal to 0. And the third row tells me that 0 is equal to 0, or sort of a triviality. So really, the conditions on a vector such that it live inside this subspace is that we need its second component to equal 0, its third component equal to 0, but its first component is unfixed because it's a free parameter in the solution as it corresponds to a column without a pivot. And so our solution vector, I had to set x2 and x3 is equal to 0. X1 was free. I expand in terms of the free parameter. This guy here, that's what you should regard as the eigenvector of the original matrix A corresponding to the eigenvalue 1. All right, so I'll write it this way. I'll grab that vector. And here the subscript is not indicating its position inside this vector. Rather, I want this subscript here to indicate that the eigenvalue corresponding to this vector with respect to the original matrix, its eigenvalue is 1. All right, and then since I only have one basis vector, my one eigenspace is going to be one-dimensional. And so the geometric multiplicity of the eigenvalue 1 is 1 because the corresponding eigenspace is one-dimensional. All right, we had a second eigenvalue. It was the number 2. So we'll do the same thing. We subtract the number 2 along the diagonal elements of A, creating this matrix, and now we calculated its null space by row reducing the matrix to reduced row echelon form. I've done that on the third line. It's in reduced row echelon form, and so I can begin writing down the corresponding vectors that live in this null space. First row is telling me that x1 plus x2 has to equal 0. Second row is telling me that x3 has to equal 0. And the third row is not telling me anything. And so what we'll get is that from this coefficient matrix, we get these conditions, which when you try to write down a vector that satisfies these three conditions, you can think of x1 as being a free parameter, x2 and x3 as being the fixed variables, and your general solution vector has this form, or simply x2 times this constant vector 1, 1, 0. So this is going to be a basis vector for this space. It's going to be the eigenvector of the matrix A with eigenvalue 2. Let me step back a little bit here. You see this zero row here? When you're calculating eigenvectors, you're going to construct this the right coefficient matrix, inserting the eigenvalue of interest into subtracting along the main diagonal, and you're going to row reduce. You should always be getting a zero row at the bottom, because the way we arrived at this number 2 was by demanding that the determinant of this matrix was equal to 0. So when I substitute the eigenvalue into this, I've got to get a matrix that's not row reducible to the identity matrix. And so this is a check in your calculation. If you're not getting a zero row at the bottom after you row reduced to row echelon form, you've made a numerical error somewhere. All right, but seeing that zero row, that's a good sign. Let's go, and in fact, once we reach a reduced row echelon form, it's pretty simple to actually write down the solution. And so the basis vector for that eigenspace corresponding to lambda equal to 2 is that vector. All right, so let me summarize what happened for this particular matrix. We calculated its characteristic polynomial, and we identified the two roots, lambda equal to 1 and lambda equal to 2. Noting how it factorized, we can actually extract some more information because we have two factors of 1 minus lambda in the characteristic polynomial. The algebraic multiplicity of the root lambda equals 1 is going to be 2. That 2 points there. And then we only have one factor of 2 minus lambda, so the algebraic multiplicity eigenvalue 2 is 1. Separate from the algebraic multiplicities, we have the geometric multiplicities. These numbers have to do with the size of the eigenspace. It's effectively the dimension. Because we only have one linearly independent eigenvector with eigenvalue 1, the geometric multiplicity is 1. And here, again, we only have one basis vector. And so the geometric multiplicity is again going to equal 1. And what I want to point out is those two identities that I stated earlier hold for this example. The sum of all the algebraic multiplicities is equal to n. We started off with a 3x3 matrix. 2 plus 1 is equal to 3. And then the other thing I stated about these multiplicities is that the geometric multiplicity is always less than or equal to the corresponding algebraic multiplicity. And indeed, 1 is less than or equal to 2, and 1 is less than or equal to 1. So this is all working out according to plan. So let's do another example. Well, I'll pause here if there are questions. Let's do another quick example to show you how these calculations proceed. Here's another 3x3 matrix, but now I'm going to start off with a more complicated one. It's not upper triangular. And nevertheless, I can still go ahead and calculate the determinant of the matrix A minus lambda times I. I didn't do the calculation explicitly here for you. When you're row reducing, or when you're trying to find determinants of matrices that have variables in as entries, you're probably not going to want to do row reduction as a means of calculating the determinant. What I actually did here was a cofactor expansion along that first row. So the determinant of this matrix would be the entry in the 1-1 slot times the sign factor, minus 1 to the 1 plus 1, plus the determinant of the corresponding minor, which is this matrix in the bottom right-hand corner of the matrix. And you can see the determinant of that 2x2 matrix is now the difference of the diagonal product. It's just going to be 2 minus lambda squared. And then I have two more terms in the cofactor expansion, but they're being multiplied by 0. So that's why the calculation is actually done after we calculate the term corresponding to the 1-1 slot. All right, and now we see that we have two eigenvalues, either lambda equals 2, with algebraic multiplicity 2, or lambda is equal to negative 4, with algebraic multiplicity 1. Only one factor of minus 4 minus lambda. All right, so there are our eigenvalues, and our algebraic multiplicities are respectively 1 for lambda equal minus 4, and 2 for lambda equal to 2. All right, let's, we've got the eigenvalues. Now we'll look at the corresponding eigenspaces. These you're going to have to do one by one. We take the first eigenvalue, negative 4, and we'll try to calculate with a basis for this null space. So that means, first of all, writing down the matrix explicitly, row reducing to reduced row echelon form. And what will happen in this case is we'll get these fractions appearing in that last slot. That these fractions arise sort of inevitably when we try to make our pivots equal to 1. So Even so, that even though I have fractions appearing in that matrix, it doesn't prevent me from writing down the solutions of this matrix times x is equal to zero. And what you'll find is that you have a one-dimensional solution space. It's going to be exactly. How do I know it's one-dimensional? Because I only have one column without a pivot. That's the number of free parameters in your solution set. And what we see is that the vector that generates this solution set is the vector minus 6/7, minus 5/7, and 1. All right, warning here. I've been saying that once you have an eigenvalue, you have infinitely many eigenvectors with that eigenvalue because you can always multiply an eigenvector by a scalar and get another eigenvector. Well, we can use that property to simplify this. If I multiply this vector by 7, I can convert all these entries into integers. And I think that's what WebAssign likes you to do. So you could either write your answers in terms of fractions, or equivalently, you can say that the eigenvector corresponding to the eigenvalue negative 4 is negative 6, negative 5, and 7, just by performing a scalar multiplication. Okay, but at any rate, what we've done is we've, for the eigenvalue minus 4, we've found all the eigenvectors corresponding to that eigenvalue. They're all multiples of this vector. All right, we had a second eigenvalue. We'll do the same thing. We subtract the eigenvalues 2, so we subtract the number 2 from the diagonal entries of A. Then we row reduce to reducer echelon form. In this case, we see that the equations corresponding to this matrix in reducer echelon form are x1 is equal to 0, x3 is equal to 0. This last row, it just says 0 is equal to 0. So the equations are actually going to be x1 is equal to 0, x2 is equal to 0, or sorry, x3 is equal to 0, and x2 corresponding to the second column is going to be a free parameter. In fact, your solution vector is going to be a multiple of the standard basis vector corresponding to the second column, or corresponding to the variable corresponding to the second column. All right. So our lambda equals 2 eigenspace is generated by the single vector. All right. So what happened in this problem? Here's the matrix. Here's the characteristic polynomial we calculated, and that calculation displayed minus 4 and 2 as the eigenvalues of A. Moreover, it shows us that the eigenvalue 2 has algebraic multiplicity 2, and the eigenvalue negative 4 has algebraic multiplicity 1. Once I had the eigenvalues, I used that to calculate the corresponding eigenfaces. For the eigenvalue minus 4, I had a one-dimensional solution set. It was generated by this vector. And for the eigenvalue 2, I also had a one-dimensional solution set. It was generated by this vector. And now I'm putting everything together in a table. The eigenvalue minus 4, here's the eigenspace corresponding to this eigenvalue is generated by this one vector. Because I have one factor of minus 4 minus lambda, the algebraic multiplicity of that eigenvalue is 1. Because I only have one basis vector in the corresponding eigenspace, the geometric multiplicity of that eigenvalue is minus 4. In the second row, we're looking at the eigenvalue 2. 2 minus lambda only occurs twice in the characteristic polynomial, so which eigen algebraic multiplicity is 2. But the corresponding eigenspace turned out to be one-dimensional. Every vector in the lambda equals 2 eigenspace is a scalar multiple of this vector. So the dimension of that eigenspace, since it's generated by a single vector, is going to be equal to 1. And again, we see that the algebraic multiplicities, those add up to the dimension of the original matrix. 1 plus 1 is equal to 3, because we started off with a 3 by 3 matrix. The geometric multiplicities, however, don't necessarily add up to 3. They only add up to 2 in this case. But that sort of analysis you're going to do, I think, maybe 6 times in the problems and homework set 9. In each, for a given matrix, the way you'll proceed on the problem set is you'll calculate the characteristic polynomial, you'll try to factorize it, and once you achieve the full linear factorization, then you can read off the eigenvalues and the algebraic multiplicities. Once you have those, you have to individually work your way through your allowed eigenvalues, calculate the dimensions of those null spaces. Those will be the dimensions of the corresponding eigenspaces. Those dimensions are exactly the geometric multiplicities of the eigenvectors. The basis vectors themselves are going to be the eigenvectors corresponding to the eigenvalues. Okay, so I'm finishing a little bit early today. I certainly have time for questions.
What exactly does geomultiplication mean, physically?
So what we're going to consider next is when can we diagonalize a matrix? That's going to be related to the problem of when can I find a good set of coordinates for which my coordinate directions are actually eigenvectors for the given matrix. And what you want is that when your coordinate vectors are eigenvectors of the matrix, that means your matrix multiplication by A can just be replaced by scalar multiplication. Everything is going to simplify. And so what will happen what you're counting here, if you sum up all the geometric multiplicities, you're counting up the number of linearly independent eigenvectors. If they don't add up to 3, that means you don't have enough independent directions in your space to reach every point in your space, because your variables, this basically is a problem that's taking place in a 3-dimensional space, but the number of basis vectors I'm getting is only 2.
So the eigenvalue describes like the shape, which is what we learned in calculus 3. Like if it's a quadratic, it'll describe whether it's positive, negative, or indeterminate.
No, it's not so much shapes. Dimension is the better word to think of. So these are representing the dimension of the corresponding eigenspace. What you would like in an ideal case is to have as many eigenspaces, many linearly independent eigenvectors as you have eigenvalues. Then what will happen is you'll have enough degrees of freedom to write every vector inside R3 as a linear combination of your 3 eigenvectors. But if you only have 2 eigenvectors, there's going to be a missing direction. And that's going to cause problems for us later on when we try to find good coordinates associated with a matrix. So, the practical interpretation of these 2 numbers is going to come, it's going to be evident in the lectures I do on Friday and Monday. In fact, one of the reasons for being able to calculate these things, I'll show you next week, is that you can solve differential equations by diagonalizing matrices. But in order for that to do it, you have to make sure you have enough independent directions in order to achieve that goal. And so these numbers will become important, but right now they're just numbers that we can observe from our calculation. So I point them out now so that when we actually need them next week, we know what they are. Okay, so other questions? If anyone has not picked up the first or second exam, and you see I have quite a bit of unclaimed exams, I'm no longer going to hold them myself because I'm not often in my office, but I will leave them with the math office. So if you're here today, I'll give them to you. But if you're not here, if you're online somehow, then you should come into the math office and pick up your 2 exams, because I guarantee that some of the problems on the final exam are going to come directly off the midterm exams. So you should definitely pick up your exams so you figure out where your errors were made.